Hi guys.
Welcome back to the Unraveling the World podcast.
On this week's episode, we wanted to talk about Black History Month. So Black History Month is an annual observance and celebration in the United States, as well as Canada and some other countries. It takes place during the month of February, and it's dedicated to recognizing and honoring the achievements, contributions, and history of African Americans and people of African descent. So the month is a time to highlight the impact of Black individuals on various aspects of society, which includes politics, science, art, culture, and much more. So the origins of Black History Month can be traced back to historians such as Carter Woodson and the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. And this initiative was started in 1926 and important because it was created to shed light on people who have contributed a lot to history. So on this episode, Ishani and I will be talking about a total of 6 different people and their contributions and how they have impacted history, as well as how their contributions still continue to affect our society till today. So Ishani, do you want to start off by talking about your first person?
Yeah, so I wanted to begin by talking about Martin Luther King. Obviously, he's a very well-known person, so I kind of wanted to give more insight about his early life and education and also his impact in the civil rights movement. So I'm going to start from all the way from when he was born. So King was born in 1929 in Atlanta, Georgia, and he was heavily influenced by his father, a church pastor, who saw King stand up to segregation in his daily life. So obviously, 1936 America was very heavily segregated, but from a very early on, in the very early stages, King obviously faced a lot of traumatic experiences, but he was always, he viewed all of these experiences as a way for a better life. And just to talk about one of them, he one time was playing with a lot of white playmates and a lot of the in school, and a lot of the white playmates started name calling him. And he, in his later on in his life, when he spoke about in one of his speeches, he talked about this experience of his, and a lot of people kind of saw themselves within King, in the sense that they saw themselves in the experiences that he faced, and they saw this as an opportunity or inspiration that if Martin Luther King was able to kind of overcome, not even overcome, but look at these past experiences and quote succeed in America, which was so heavily white dominated, then maybe they had a chance to do this too. And his, like, one of the first times that he was heavily noticed by America was when Rosa Parks, Kavi will talk a bit more about Rosa Parks, but the incident with Rosa Parks, the Montgomery bus riot, was kind of spurred a lot of people to understand how wrong the bus segregation was. And that led a lot of African Americans to hold riots and protests, mainly peaceful protests, to kind of talk or speak against all of the segregation that was going on at the time. And King was the one who took the lead in, he took a pivotal leadership role in organizing the protests. And a lot of people kind of recognized work that he did for it, and he became an inspiration and an idol for many. And that was kind of one of the first African American civil rights activists that a lot of people look forward to. And obviously his name is very well known. And outside of just like the impact that he had another type of impact, in the sense that a lot of people saw a possibility of themselves going into the field that he was in, because obviously a lot of Black Americans, they took a lot of those traditional sharecropping roles, and he was able to give them hope that even they had a chance to kind of make a name for themselves and find a way out of that horrendous system and get to where he was. Obviously, if the world was a better place, and that's what King fought for, with fighting against injustice and finding peace between white Americans and black Americans.
Yeah, I wanted to segue into the conversation about Rosa Parks. So Rosa Parks was also known for her heavy activism, and I'm going to talk about her early life, her education and activism, as well as what makes her famous to this day and how she continues to make an impact through her legacy. So to start off about her early life, she was born on February 4th of 1913 in Alabama. She was born to both African-American parents, and she grew up in an experienced racial segregation community. But in her community, there was a lot of inequality, and she attended the Montgomery Industrial School for Girls. So it was a private school known for its progressive approach to education. And she later married Raymond Parks, who was a barber, and was also an active member of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. So she later became involved in civil rights activism early on. She joined her husband in efforts to fight against racial injustice. And on December 1st of 1955, that's a day many people remember because Rosa Parks, who was a secretary for the member of the NAACP, she boarded a city bus after a long day of work. So during this time period, white people had the privilege of sitting in the seats, and black people had to stand up, and she refused to give up her seat to a white man when asked to do so, which was against the law. And her refusal led to her arrest, and she was charged with violating the segregation laws. And her arrest served as a catalyst for the Montgomery bus boycott, which was organized by local civil rights leaders, including Martin Luther King Jr. So the African American residents boycotted the city buses for 381 days, which in hopes of seeking to end racial segregation on public transportation. And it marked the first large non-scale, non-violent protest against segregation, and it inspired similar movements across the country. So her one small act ended up creating a ripple effect and inspired other Black Americans to pursue the same and fight for rights that they deserve. And in terms of legal and social impact, the Montgomery bus boycott resulted in a Supreme Court ruling called Broder versus Gale, which declared racial segregation on public bus, which declared public buses, racial segregation on public buses unconstitutional. And this success brought national attention and national awareness to the civil rights movement, and it put a spotlight on Rosa Parks, who was the primary starter of this movement. And even though she did create a lot of change and she changed a lot of communities and people around her, she faced a lot of backlashes and economic hardships due to her activism and speaking out. For example, she lost her job and she received a lot of death threats from people. And because of these threats and difficulties of finding work, her family had to move to Detroit in 1957. But even in Detroit, she continued her activism and she worked for U.S. Representative John Conyers, and she participated in the Northern struggle for civil rights. And till this day, her legacy is spoken about in classrooms, in interviews, or just her legacy, you know, changed a lot of people's rights till this day. So even after she moved, she continued to advocate for civil rights through her life. She's won numerous awards for the work she's done, including the Presidential Medal of Freedom and the Congressional Gold Medal. She passed away in 2005, but she left behind a big legacy of courage, resilience, and a commitment to justice. Her actions inspired a lot of activists, and she was a symbol for power as well as a power against systemic injustice. So Ishani is going to be talking about another person now.
Yeah, so I kind of wanted to talk about Catherine Coleman. So Catherine Coleman is a legendary and a very well-known mathematician who was born in 1989 in West Virginia. So Catherine's parents were determined were very determined that their four children would complete college. And at this time of the early 20th century, this was a very ambitious goal, because obviously the school system was extremely segregated, and the black school that Catherine Coleman attended had only two rooms for seventh graders, and for black Americans to get a chance or a seat in one of these two rooms was very low. And eventually Coleman, she ended up getting a spot, but her family had to move 80 miles. But obviously Catherine was extremely smart and eventually finished high school when she was just 13 years old. And after finishing high school, she enrolled at a black college in West Virginia. And by 18 years old, she graduated with a double degree in French and math. And some of the hardships that she obviously went on to accomplish a lot, which I will eventually talk about, but just to talk about the field that she was in, mathematics, like math itself is a very, at this time, just to set the stage, it is a very white dominated field. And for her to not only be a woman, but to her to be a black woman was extremely, it was very rare. And a lot of people looked down on her for this, and a lot of people doubted her, but she obviously proved herself to be extremely smart, and it kind of was, she was a very big inspiration for a lot of black women at the time who were interested in the things that she was interested in, and they kind of gave her, she kind of gave them a hope. And just to talk about Catherine again, she soon learned of a job opportunity at the National Advisory Committee of Astronautics, and they specifically were hiring women with math experiences. And on her first day that she went to her job, the room was full of black American women, and that was the first time that she realized that she wanted to pursue mathematics over French, because obviously she had a French degree as well. And I think that moment of the woman coming together and her other woman serving as an inspiration for her to continue with her ambitions is a very emotional time, I guess, because obviously she was extremely smart, but because how dominated male dominated the field was, she almost didn't go into getting her master's or fully completing her education, in the sense that getting a job that was that was related to what she actually wanted to go into. But on her first day at NACA, she realized that there are other black women who are in the same field that she is, and they could obviously all support each other. And obviously there were not a lot of black women, but there were a few who, at the time at the company, NACA, so they were able to uphold each other. And I think that moment, I feel like it speaks to a lot of us, in the sense that we should obviously uphold each other, but to her at the time, it kind of served as a pivotal moment to all of the accomplishments she eventually went on to make. But the problem was that NACA was still segregated, and just like the rest of America, and it was required by federal law that the employers cannot discriminate based of race. But just as a lot of the governmental laws at this time, a lot of them were not actually followed. And obviously a lot of times companies had to say this because of the Constitution and whatnot, but it was not necessarily followed by everyone. But eventually Catherine and the other black women, they fought for their place in the company, and they continuously had to prove themselves worthy of having a place in the mathematical field and the aerospace engineering field. And they all eventually together created a trajectory analysis for Alan Shepard's Freedom 7 mission in May 1961, which was America's first human space flight. And this was at a time where digital computers were relatively new and untested. And she was one of the first ones who famously checked the computer's math for John Glenn's historic first orbital spaceflight in February 1962. So, and it was like all the women combined. That's what they did. And just to think about, like, if she like the other women who were on her team, if they had not done that, like, America would not get that recognition of having, like, that first human spaceflight. And I think that kind of speaks to a lot, because a lot of people kind of doubted all of the strengths that she had within the company. And she was able to prove to herself that this was the field that she deserved to be in, and not some other field like she had previously thought of getting into. But it also spoke to a lot of women that, like, they to trust themselves and the education that they had. And it's inspired a lot of people to educate themselves, women or man, to educate themselves, and having that education that nobody can take away. And that is why she is someone that needs to be remembered during Black History Month.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about another woman. So Ishani talked about a very influential woman. So I wanted to talk about another influential woman called Harriet Tubman. So starting off with her early life and escape from slavery, she was born into slavery around 1820 in Maryland as Araminta Ross. And during her time as a slave, she endured harsh conditions and physical abuse during her enslavement, including a severe head injury, which was inflicted by an overseer. In 1849, she escaped slavery, leaving her family behind, but then she later returned to rescue them as long as others. She became a key figure in the Underground Railroad, which is basically a network of secret routes and safe houses used by enslaved individuals to escape to freedom. And over the course of at least 13 missions, she's guided around 70 enslaved individuals, including family and friends, to freedom in the North or Canada. She gained the nickname of Moses for leading people to the promised land of freedom. And she continued to do this despite having a bounty over her head. So her activities as a conductor on the Underground Railroad made her a target for slaveholders. And slaveholders and those who supported the institution of slavery offered a substantial bounty for capture, alive or dead. But despite this threat, she remained undeterred and she continued her dangerous work. Even after she was free, she still went back and saved other people because she believed that freedom was very important. And during the Civil War, she also served in the Union Army in various capacities. She worked as a nurse, a cook, a laundress, and she offered her services to soldiers, both of Black and white. And her knowledge of the Southern terrain and her experiences as a scout and spy made her invaluable to the Union forces. And after the Civil War, she continued her commitment to social justice and equality. She became an advocate for women's suffrage, recognizing the intersectionality of gender and racial discrimination. So she worked alongside suffragists and spoke at suffrage conventions, promoting the right to vote for all women. So her humanitarian efforts extended to ageism as well, because she created the establishment of the Harriet Tubman Home for the Aged. So this was primarily targeted towards aging African Americans, and she provided a place of residence and care for elderly African Americans through her establishment. And her legacy and recognition comes from her contributions to the abolitionist movement, her work on the Underground Railroad, and her dedication to social causes, and she has left an enduring legacy. In 2020, it was announced that she would be featured on the new $20 bill, becoming the first African-American woman to be depicted on U.S. currency. She clearly resembles resilience, courage, and a commitment to justice. She's helped, like, several people escape from slavery, but her motivation for activism also went beyond, abolitionism, and also went towards feminism, where she advocated for voting rights for women all around.
Yeah, and now I'm going to talk about Muhammad Ali, who was born on January 17th in 1942 in Kentucky. And he is obviously a very well-known name because he is known as the greatest boxer in history. and one of the first fighter to win the World Heavyweight Championship on 3 separate occasions. And he is also known for his social message on Black pride and his Black resistance to white domination, and for refusing induction to the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War. And he is, obviously, he is known for his boxing career, but he is also very well known for being able to balance and finding, like, that, balance between social justice and being an activist and being such a legendary boxer. And one of his actions that, like, very clearly speaks about the balance that he had was in 1960, when he won his Olympic title, he actually ended up donating all of his proceeds to suffering communities all over the world. And he eventually even became like the United Nations, like, messenger of peace ambassador and the goodwill ambassador, which kind of speaks on the type of human that he was, someone that recognized that not everyone, like, everyone is going, all different communities around the world had was suffering in some sense, especially, like, the Black community at the time. And as he was, like, a very famous person, I think he was able to recognize the sliver of privilege that comes with that, and he was able to take the proceeds that he had won and donate that to, like, the people in need. And he was obviously he was very, like, I think something that a lot of people also recognize about him is that, like, in his early career, he actually, his some of his most early on coaches were white men, and he was able to find, even though he was, like, the odd one out, he was able to find, like, he was able to find his place within the field, where, in the sense that a lot of Black folks, they were obviously the odd one out in several careers, because people expected them to be a certain way or act a certain way. So when they entered a lot of these white dominated fields, they were seen as not worthy enough, or they had to prove themselves multiple times over to even be looked at. And he was the odd one out in the boxing field in the beginning, where a lot of his coaches and a lot of his mates were white, and he was able to, like, kind of work through a lot of these a lot of the issues that come with being the odd one out. And he was very open about the experiences that he had, and a lot of the speeches he talked about these experiences, and he made himself very transparent for other people to realize that they are not alone, and they can, I guess, also find a voice through him, because he proved himself to be the same as a lot of these other people, and he was able to work through them and find a place in society and be today a legend.
Yeah, and then the last person that I wanted to talk about was Dred Scott. He's known a lot because of court cases. His name has been mentioned a lot. But to talk about his early life and enslavement, he was born into slavery around 1799 on the Blow family plantation in Southampton County, Virginia. He spent the early years of his life enslaved by the Blow family before being sold to Peter Blow, an army surgeon. So in 1830, Peter Blow died, and Scott was sold to John Emerson, who was a U.S. Army doctor. And under Emerson's ownership, his life became entwined with the military as he accompanied Emerson to various army posts. And one significant aspect of Scott's life was his journey with Emerson to free states and territories. They traveled to places like Illinois and Wisconsin, where slavery was prohibited by the Missouri Compromise of 1820. Scott resided in these free territories for an extended period, contributing to his legal argument for freedom later in life. So after John Emerson's death in 1843, Dred Scott and his wife Harriet continued to serve the Emerson family. In 1846, with the help of abolitionist lawyers, Scott filed a lawsuit for his freedom in the St. Louis Circuit Court. He argued that his previous residence in free territories should, you know, help him become a free man, as slavery was prohibited there. So that kind of leads to the Dred Scott versus Sanford 1857 case. It reached the U.S. Supreme Court, where it was officially known as this name, and Chief Justice Roger Taney delivered the majority opinion, and he declared that enslaved individuals, including those in free territories, were considered property, not citizens. So the decision also declared the Missouri Compromise unconstitutional, allowing slavery to expand into territories previously deemed free. And this court's decision had a lot of consequences, and it intensified the sectional tensions between the North and the South. And it kind of put a spotlight on the issue of slavery, which contributed to the outbreak of the Civil War in 1861. Dred Scott and his family were eventually freed by Irene Emerson, who was the widow of John Emerson's brother, after the Supreme Court decision. Tragically, Scott did die of tuberculosis in 1858, just a few months after he received his freedom, but his legacy does continue as a symbol for legal and moral struggles against the institution of slavery in the United States. So he created a lot of change through his legal battle, and he left an undeniable impact on American history through his fight.
Yeah, and I think that concludes this episode. I think it's very important during Black History Month to recognize a lot of the Black African American leaders that we've had in history. While Kavya and I only talk about six, there are hundreds of thousands of other male and women leaders who have had such an influence on America's history, and we would not be here today without their actions and the inspiration that they have had in a lot of the members in our community today. And yeah, we definitely encourage you guys to kind of research and learn about a lot of these other African Americans.
Yeah, so to conclude the episode, there are a lot of things you can do during Black History Month. Ishani and I touched up on educating you guys about like the history of some of the people, but like Ishani said, there are hundreds and thousands of other people that we didn't have the time to touch up on that have contributed to history. But during this month, you could engage in various activities to learn, celebrate, and promote awareness about the achievements and contributions of these Black individuals. You can just educate yourself by listening to like these sorts of podcast episodes, reading books or articles on the history and culture of Black Americans. You can also visit museums and exhibits, support Black-owned businesses, attend events, celebrate Black art and literature, watch films and documentaries, engage in conversations, volunteer. There's a lot of things that you can do. We did our share by talking about Black History Month. So thank you so much for listening, and we hope to see you in our next episode. Bye.
Bye.